Thanks for tuning in to episode 239 of the Overseas Connection, the official podcast of the G4TE.com community. That is Gaming for the Elderly, and today is October 8th, 2013. I am one of your hosts today, Greg DeLacy, and joining me this week, the return of Mr. Richard Primrose.
Hello.
Rich.
Hello. You're all right.
Good to have you. Yeah, I'm great. Good to have you back on the show. And Rich, it's just you and I. It's just the two of us. I feel like we should be playing music right now.
All right. Where's the other two slackers then? What have they been up to?
Well, Chris is on a secret mission that cannot be revealed, unless he killed us, in which case I told him it's okay. He keeps it secret. No, but he does have work stuff going on. I'm pretty sure it's not top secret, but, he's just, unavailable. And Mike.
I saw Mike running for government or something.
Yes, Mike was visiting London and I guess checking out the House of Parliament or something to that effect. I don't know what you guys call it over there. All I know is he showed me a picture and I'll pull it up right now. It was a picture of I believe it was a ground, I don't know, like a plaque, if you will, and on it. And this was the important part. It said this dial. It says it's a dial, but I fail to see the dial part of it, by the way, because it's just a disc like cemented into concrete. And Mike took a picture of it, you know, looking down like his shoes. And it says this dial is set to Greenwich. Is it Greenwich?
Greenwich.
Well, it looks like Greenwich. I'm just saying.
Just stick,
you know,
G-R-E-E-N. Stick to Gross Mountain, Tom.
Yeah, I know. So he said he thought of me when he saw that, and I said, well, that's good, but it's incorrect. It should be Gross Mountain Time. Yeah. So, yes. He was dabbling around London with his partner, who I have come to the conclusion is significantly shorter than him. Mike is a giant, apparently, because this guy looks like he comes up to Mike's like belly button.
What I think they were up to? I think they've been beckoned down there by the Grand Lodge Master. Because, you know, Mike's been doing rather well with his business and stuff like that. I think he's actually gained entry into the Freemasons. So he'll be pulling up his leg and standing on one knee and wearing rubber gloves.
I like
and
it.
To clean his balls
I
and
like
stuff.
It.
Yeah.
He does look rather professional in the picture, too. Suit, tie, the whole nine yards.
Exactly.
I would like to... Not crazy about the tie choice. I would like to point out purple does not go with a navy blue suit,
yeah.
Mike.
Join the order. The order.
Yeah, apparently, yes. But outside of that, no, he looks rather dapper. Yeah.
PS game reference there. Did you see that?
I did. That was good.
Front cover of Game Informer this week.
How would you know that, Rich?
Because I've seen it. The interwebs.
I thought that was one of the magazines you guys were.
No, because that's American only. We don't do that one.
Is it really American only?
Yeah, we don't get that over it.
That's a shame. It's a pretty quality magazine. The only thing I didn't care for was that you had to join the GameStop Power Up Club to get it free. I suppose you could buy it, but you know, you had to be part of their little GameStop Power Up Club, and I just don't do anything with GameStop anymore. So.
Yeah, I think their covers are quite renowned, actually. They do some really good artwork on
it. Yeah. And the magazine itself is, I mean, it's got a nice heft to it. It doesn't, the pages feel nice and thick. It doesn't feel like a cheap magazine. You know, like a lot of magazines these days are really getting thin with the pages. It's like you feel like you're almost leafing through a flyer that comes in your mailbox or something. But no, that's good. It's good stuff. Well, that was an interesting sidetrack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you carry on, I'll start talking about varnish levels and stuff like that on your front covers, but we're not going to that.
No, we won't get into that level of printing. Although I won't say I could keep up with you, Rich, but at one point in time I did deal with printing presses. And I went to the basic down to the print shop and had to inspect the first sheets coming off the press and then tell them they had their colors all fucked up and they hated me for that and yeah.
Oh, you was one of them, was you? One of them picky customers, was you?
No, the worst part was I was a broker dealing with a customer, and so my customer was incredibly picky, and so I knew how picky he was, and of course he was paying me good money, so I had to be the picky one to the press guy or the printer guy. But anyway, Yeah, there's nothing like having a guy squabble over the color of a red in a logo, and it just being just a minuscule. There's a little too much blue in that. And you're like, really? For fuck's sake, just say it's fine. Come on.
A place where we worked before.
Yeah.
Well, where I worked before. Sorry, what am I talking about? We had a press pass, and it was for basically a swimming costume catalogue. Yeah.
Oh,
so the customer came in and brought in a bag of swimming costumes and basically laid them all out on the printing press and told us we had to match them. Now, we would have preferred it if he brought the models for the swimsuits in with him and got them, put them on so we could see it in the right light with the right skin tones and everything. But he wasn't willing to do that. But anyway, needless to say, it was an impossible task.
Oh, I bet that was like, you want to pull your hair.
All the night shift were on about, they were going to put them on. and run around the factory in them. I don't know if they did that.
As they should have.
Come on then, let's talk about some games.
Yeah. Let's talk about some games. I know both of us have, some games we want to talk about, and there's some games at least for me, have been already talked about, at length and nauseam, so I'm not going to go into any more Grand Theft Auto 5, other than to say I've turned a little bit of a corner in terms of some of my enjoyment with the game. I think some of the early character stuff and the story stuff that I was having issues with, especially like the Trevor character, at least of recent, you know, happenings in the game, he seems to have dialed it back a little bit. So, it's made for playtime being a little more fun, for lack of a better word. But I just really didn't like playing as Trevor. And now suddenly I'm coming around. I love flying planes and helicopters, and that's a big part of what on Trevor's side of it. So I've kind of had to stomach him for a little bit. But thankfully, it's gotten past some of the stupidity that, as far as I was concerned, was just ridiculous parts of the story. And I'm having fun with it. Been playing a lot of Madden 25 as well.
Playing the online GTA yet?
No, I have not. I've been like wanting to, and then I heard all the problems, and I just stayed clear of it. I said, you know what? I'm gonna give it a good solid week before it clears up, and I'll jump in. My desire is at some point, either this week or when I get back from my trip, to jump in. So, I probably won't have anything to report next week, because I won't be around. But the week after, hopefully.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure Mike has jumped into GTA 5 online. Anyway, let's see, where was I? Madden 25? Yeah, it's football. Having fun with it. Been playing in a league with Gary. It started off really horribly bad for me. My first two weeks losses was just struggling. And I figured out that just some key elements of my team needed some upgrades. And so I went to becoming, you know, basically being a general manager and trying to get trades with my roster, as well as draft picks, that kind of thing. And so went about seeking out some players, trying to make some trades work. It was tough to get the computer to allow for some of these trades. The computer was quite difficult. I didn't think it would be that difficult to make a trade happen. And, it really put the screws to me on a couple times, but eventually was able to get to a level of roster that I'm happy with, and suddenly I'm winning. So go figure. But the game I wanted to talk about, Rich, I jumped into the Battlefield 4 beta last night. And it was a very brief playthrough, but what struck me, like, I mean, it was incredibly like poor with the graphical fidelity of that game. I know it's a beta, and I know that there's still time, and it's potentially old code, but when I jumped into, and this is the Xbox 360 version of the Battlefield 4 beta, but the gun models looked really bland. I mean, jarringly different from what Battlefield 3 was. So Battlefield 3, to me, looked pretty good. And I jumped into the Battlefield 4 beta, and I was just like, holy crap, this looks horrible.
Is this the shape of things to come, Greg?
I don't know, maybe. I mean, I was just, I was taken aback. And you know, maybe it's because I've been playing Grand Theft Auto V, and visually that game is really beautiful. But I mean, when I jumped into Battlefield 4, I was just like, good God, this game looks like ass. And, you know, like I said, the gun models, it was all really low res textures on the guns themselves. They didn't look, very realistic at all. The buildings and the ground textures all seemed very, low resolution. I mean, just overall, the online visual experience of Battlefield 4 for the 360, and I don't know what it's like on the PS3 or, you know, I've seen videos of the PC and the next-gen consoles, and I'll say what I've seen in video of the next-gen and PC versus what I saw last night is like night and day. This game clearly, at least from my brief period with the current-gen console, screams it really is a next-gen and PC-only title. I think people playing on a current-gen console are potentially in for a very, very rude awakening. You know, I hope they can shore things up and make it look better, but man, I was...
Do you think this has got anything to do with these tactics that they've got where what they're saying is, we're going to give you a code, and with this code, you can go and use this on your next-gen console, and you can get it for cheap. So do you think the tactics are, let's get these suckers in, and they've teamed up with Microsoft and Sony and said, we'll make a really shit game, and everybody's going to go, fuck this, I'm going to use this code and get a new console.
See, I don't think that's the tactic. You know, I thought the tactic before was, this is a kind of an easy way for us to milk an extra $10 out of everybody, because we know the people that are buying next gen systems potentially still have their current gen game systems. So they may be holding off on getting this game on current gen because the next gen system is not going to launch for another basically about a month. So we'll basically offer to them, get them to buy it on the current gen, and then give us an extra $10 to upgrade it. So this way, you know, they don't have to quote unquote wait. But all I have to say after seeing that is, if you can wait, there was nothing about that game that said it needs to be bought on a current gen system if you're going to get it on a next gen system.
Right, can I just ask you then, let's get down to the mechanics of the thing. So did you feel about, personally for me, Battlefield 3 seemed like it was a lot less destructible than I think I always liked Bad Company. The destructibility in that seems as if it was a lot better, and there was a lot more things that could be destroyed.
Right.
So how does it feel in this one? Is it because obviously all the trailers are pointing towards it being a lot more?
There still was definitely a level of destructibility. I mean, it was on par with, I think, Battlefield 3. I didn't see any buildings coming crashing down or anything like that in my playthrough. I did. It was, and I can't remember the name of the map, but it's the map that they showed in the gameplay demos at E3 and I think at Eurogamer and Gamescom as well, where they have the big skyscraper building that you can go up to the top. And I jumped in the elevator, rode it up to the top, and that was pretty cool, although it very much kind of reminded me of just getting into one of the Mass Effect elevators.
Yeah.
Where you get into the elevator, the door closes, and then you're just sitting there kind of waiting. Because it's not a glass elevator, so you can't see yourself actually going up anywhere.
Yeah.
And so then you reach the top and you jump out. And what was interesting is, as we were battling up on the rooftop, there was you saw a few helicopters flying by, and so it made for some very dynamic play, as the helicopters were literally, you know, being able to get level with you, as opposed to before, they're always kind of above you when you're, you know, fighting from the ground. And, you know, they're having to make passes above you. But now you'd literally have helicopters rising up from below into like the floor you were on and shooting in at you. But, that, you know, I mean, it felt like Battlefield 3 gameplay, Battlefield 4, comparable to Battlefield 3. I guess that's the right way to put that. It didn't overly impress me. And I think I was just so caught off guard by the graphics that was really something I was focusing on the whole time. I was just literally looking around, just being like, I can't believe this game does not look better. And so, you know, I know they had, I think they had a similar problem last year with Battlefield 3. Was it 2 years ago? I guess it was 2 years ago with Battlefield 3, the beta for the PS3 version. I remember it coming out and people complaining about how poorly it looked. Very much seems like maybe shoes on the other foot, because I haven't seen anybody necessarily talking about the PS3 version looking poor, but yeah, either way, I was just very much caught off guard. And I don't like to harp on graphics that much, because I know gameplay, you know, typically trumps graphics, but for this game in particular, because it's always looked good in the past, I mean, from Bad Company to Bad Company 2 to Battlefield 3, I mean, it's looked great. So to see it like this was just, yeah, it was shocking. That's the best way to put it. I do think, you know, like I said, if you can afford to wait, I don't think there's a reason why you need to have Battlefield 4 on current gen day one if you're planning to upgrade to either new consoles or just going the PC route. I think clearly those are the better options to be going with for this game. It seems like a game that really was made for next gen and PC, and has a downported version for the current gen consoles.
So this beta, is it just a case of having a couple of maps and a couple of game modes, or?
Correct. Yeah, they have Domination and Conquest as the game mode types, and then I believe there were two different maps available.
Yeah.
But yeah, so.
Okay.
Buyer be warned if you're getting it for the current gen. That's all I have to say. Anyway, so that's pretty much does it for me. So let's, you know, one thing I do want to talk about, and I know a lot of people have been talking about it. It's not game related. I'm going to throw it out there. Went and saw the movie Gravity over the weekend.
Oh, everyone's talking about that film.
Yes. And if you like video games, I think this is, it's a good game for video gamers. Or sorry, a good movie for video gamers. Yeah. A good game for, the 3D. So I saw it in 3D. And I would recommend in 3D, because they do some really cool visual effects with the 3D. So to me, it was definitely well worth seeing in 3D. But more importantly, I loved the sound design of this movie. They did some great stuff with the sound design. You really get that sensation of isolation and being in a very foreign environment. And probably the best representation of being in zero gravity I've seen in a movie. You know, oftentimes you see movies that are out in space, and they kind of apply some of the laws of gravity to those environments sometimes. In this, they definitely play on the fact you are in zero gravity and the ramifications of that. And on top of everything, fantastically, you know, choreographed, great acting, story, you know, it's a great story. I just was very, very impressed. And I really didn't know that I was going to be, you know, super excited about the movie, when we first went to go see it. I saw some reviews coming back, and a lot of reviewers were being very positive on it. We saw it opening night Friday, and, once I sat down and got into it, I was just like, okay, this is a great movie. So, yeah, highly recommend Gravity. Mm-hmm. The story can be a little slow in a few a few spots. It's not this action-packed thrill ride, but it is a fantastic experience. And like I said, see it in 3D if you can.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested to watch it.
All right, that's me. Let's switch over to you, Rich.
What have I been playing in this long period of time? Well,
every game on the PS3, Rich. That's what you've been playing.
Yeah.
Every game. You're our new Sony correspondent, by the way.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, you know, I've moved my Xbox. That's now in my son's room. So I've not been getting any Xbox action. So it's all PS3 now. So a couple of demos first. I played the Diablo demo.
Okay. What'd you think?
Right, I've played Diablo 2 briefly years back.
Right.
And I get it. It's all about the loot and.
Right. Well, didn't you play Torchlight 2, did you not?
I played Torchlight. Yeah, I played Torchlight. Right. I played Torchlight on PC and, if I remember rightly, I played it on the Xbox demo. Yeah. So, you may have already talked about it, but it's a long demo, so you get a good fair crack of the whip playing and getting into it. But the thing that, I don't know if it was just me, but the thing that got me a bit annoyed from what I'd experienced previously from Diablo was, it didn't appear to be very much decent loot to be had. You know, they're tempting you into trying to buy the game.
Right.
I played it probably for about an hour and a half. So,
no, that's interesting because I thought the big hubbub was that Diablo 3 on consoles had kind of reset the bar for loot, and that you know, the Blizzard basically was getting rid of the auction house because of concerns over how the auction house had impacted the game and how so many people were reacting favorably to the loot in Diablo 3.
But when I was playing the demo, so obviously you're getting clothes dropped and stuff like that,
right?
And weapons and so on. I went with the guy I was playing as was he was a magic dude, so he starts off with spells and stuff, and I had like a staff and so on. But the clothing and things like that and amulets just seems like I wasn't really picking much up, which I was a bit surprised at really for the length of time that I played it.
Right.
Maybe I was missing stuff. I don't know, but.
I'm not familiar with Diablo 3 in terms of the mechanics, but so I'm assuming you are picking up little pieces of loot here and there, but you're saying that they really weren't worth anything. Are you able to sell those off for gold easily enough?
Yeah, there was traders there that you could sell stuff to. The thing was, because I wasn't getting any decent loot, I quite quickly found as well that there was areas that I was going into that there was no way that I was going to be, you know, getting through all of the enemies that were there. But because it was areas that I had to get to progress the story, I was doing a lot of just outrunning enemies and just having like loads of chasing going off. And then if you,
run away, and you
hit an exit door and then obviously it refreshes and you're in a different area and you're all right. Which, you know, obviously not very enjoyable. You want to feel a bit empowered, don't you, whilst you're having these fights and stuff. So,
it's just run.
Yeah. So that was a bit crap. And they had these bloated, like, monsters that came at you. A bit like the fat things that you get in Left 4 Dead. Yeah. Okay, but when you killed them, then loads of snakes came out of them. And, you know, I was getting hammered. I was getting hammered left, right, and center. So, yeah. Yeah, I wasn't that impressed. And seeing as though I did quite enjoy Diablo 2, I was a bit disappointed. But I've heard that it is probably the better version of the game. So maybe it's just I've outgrown that game. I don't know.
That's a possibility.
Balancing just didn't seem right for me. Not for the demo. It should have given you a bit more empowerment to feel good about yourself.
I should be able to comment on the retail version of it. I know I'm getting the Diablo 3 Gamefly version.
Yeah.
Or Gamefly, I should say, sending me the 360 version of it. So I'm assuming it's the same as the PlayStation 3. So.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
See if it's different from retail.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the next one. This is the one I'm most excited for.
I'm going to have to, you know, I can't give you a full overview of it, but, and I'll tell you for why. I downloaded and played the demo for Beyond Two Souls. Yeah.
Okay. So, right.
Unfortunately, I downloaded it. It was in the morning. I downloaded it through the night because we all know about the PS3 loading and all that lot. But I'm getting into this. I'm a good trained up PS3 player. What? I'm getting in nice patterns of just, you know, loading stuff before I go to bed, and then playing them the following day and stuff like Dragon's Dogma. Got it down so it was ready for the weekend and so on, but we'll get on to that one in a minute. So yeah, I started it just before I was going to work, so I had about 40 minutes or so.
Okay. And this is David Cage's game, the follow-up to, well, I shouldn't say it's his next game after Heavy Rain.
Yeah.
It's not related at all.
Yeah. I think I've probably just played half of the demo because I had to put it down because I had to go to work. But okay. I'll just take you through what my impressions of it were. Again, just the same as Heavy Rain, beautiful looking game. It looks stunning from the start. I found obviously the subject matter for me is grabbing me a lot more than what Heavy Rain did from the start as well. Because I like the supernatural side of things, you know, Alan Wake and all that sort of thing. Fits in nicely with the sort of things that float my boat, game-wise. Seems to be a little bit of streamlining that they've done with the mechanics, which probably is a good thing, because it annoyed me when I was playing Heavy Rain. And it's quite good, actually, because I've played Heavy Rain so recently. I've got a good comparison. Right. Seem to refine, there's not, you know, when you're opening doors and stuff, you haven't got to do analog stick left, loop it up, or analog stick to the right and loop it down. It's just simple interactions with the analog sticks to do simple tasks, which is the way that it should be. The walk forward on the trigger thing, that's gone, which is good. Okay. I think that's really
good. So you walk with the analog
stick?
You're
just using the analog stick.
Okay.
The camera seems to be fairly fixed, but there is movement to look around and stuff as well. Now, the first thing they introduced you to is the fact that there's a lot of speculation, and then it became clear after they had the E3 presentation, well over a year ago, probably not this year, it was the year before, wasn't it? About the fact that it was supernatural, and it was to do with this other body within you. Like a presence that you get to control, which brings about this telekinesis that you've got. So the tutorial takes place, basically you're in a facility, and you can see that you've been in this facility for some time because there's a lot of people that are familiar with you. You're just a little girl, and you're basically asked by one of the staff members to go into to do some form of routine with them. You know, they're obviously studying you, and they want you to go in and take some tutorial type thing. So this is your tutorial as well for the game. So they lead you through the facility, and you sat down in what is like an interview room. The guys are behind two-sided glass, and you have a brief conversation with the guy that's the psychiatrist.
William Defoe.
Okay. Again, he's a brilliant likeness, excellent likeness, but I heard it somebody else say on the podcast, well, the guy is probably the closest you're going to get to looking like a real video game character in real life, with his chiseled features and so on, which is true. So here they introduce you to the fact that you've got this presence within you and you get to control it. So you're thinking along the lines of... what's the Mafia game where the supernatural?
Mafia game that's supernatural. Oh, Dark Side. Or
no.
Darkness.
The darkness, yeah. So you had that mechanic in there where you can basically go out of your body and take this presence through vents and stuff. Well, this, you are completely ethereal, so you can go through walls and everything. But there is... like an elastic band limit to how far you can go, which you find out later on. So you're in one side of a room, and then there is a lady, which I think is probably some form of medium. So she's prone to being able to contact people via the mind. She's on the other side, and you've got the typical study cards with the wave patterns and the circles and so on. And you've got a guess. So the way that they learn you how to take the presence out of your body is to get you to come out, zoom through the wall, look at the card that she's looking at, then come back and choose your card. Yeah, so very simple. Gets you into the habit of how you do that. And that is excellent. It's good controls and so on. I enjoyed that. And also, you then... It takes the story so that you're starting to lose control of being able to control this spirit. So she starts panicking. And what they tell you to do is they want you to start then moving things. So it's got a very interesting way of doing that. So you've got like two... there's two lights on the screen which act as like cursors. So you can go and aim with the dot, and then if you pull the analog sticks back together, you can do the, you know, the thing in Ghost where the ghost's training him how to move stuff, flick things like the can in the train station, you know,
right.
You're basically doing that. So you use your analog sticks, you flick them, and then you can start moving things around, and then it just lets you mess around with the room, and this woman's getting more and more scared. And I found that quite amusing.
You're getting better at it. She's getting more scared.
Yeah. I was trying to find things that I could actually kill her or do something really drastic with to move the story drastically one way or the other, but I couldn't do it. But yeah, so that was it. It was a really cool way of like showing you the whole mechanics of how to control the spirit. And at this point, it then takes you via a flash forward into another section, which is teaching the combat. Now, I was talking about Heavy Rain, this is the one thing that frustrated me about Heavy Rain, which was to do with the fact that it was me learning the controller, because I'd just got this PS3 and I was trying to get used to the symbols and stuff like that. And it has refined it. What it's done is, when you go into combat, when you throw a punch, it will throw the punch for you and slow down. And what it wants you to do is, when it slows down at that point, you've got to flick your analog stick in the right direction that you're punching. And then it will continue that move, and that will be a successful completion of it. If you flick the wrong direction or whatever, then it will go into a cinematic of you failing, and then you have to try it again. So as part of this tutorial, you're in a gym, you've got a trainer with some pads, and you've got to get used to like ducking and doing 1-2 combinations, and then eventually that's your tutorial for that bit over. Whilst it's an improvement, it's definitely an improvement, I still found it frustrating, and I was doing it repetitively, but I could see that it's something that you will grasp a lot quicker and find a lot less frustrating than what you was doing previously, especially with them. You know, I used to get the tiles that came up and you had to string moves together. Right. Yeah, by holding down multiple keys and stuff. Hopefully they've got rid of all of that. I didn't see anything to do with like holding down multiple combinations of keys on the pad, but that may be something I missed. So after you do the combat bit, which was not as bad, but not my ideal form of combat, then you then move into what I think is the main story when she's grown up. She was grown up at this, she's obviously been trained up by some government department, and that's why they were getting her to do the training. And then it flash forwards again, and you can see she's rough looking. She's got a hooded top on. She's obviously, she's trying to stay unnoticed, but she looks a bit like a bit of a vagrant, but she's on the train. And it basically, you can do the same thing again and come out of the body. So it seems as if you can do that at will, and just have a wander around the train and see who's on the train and so on. The train gets pulled, for an unplanned stop to a train station. You can see there's a massive presence of police there. And that, unfortunately, is where I had to stop, which was a bit of a pain in the ass because I had to go to work. But, you know, to give him his dues, I find it appealing. So I don't think it's going to be something I'll go out and buy because of how badly I got bitten with Heavy Rain. And for the record, if Stuart Fowler's listening, I know he kept saying the whole thing about characters getting killed and stuff like that. You make a fair point, mate. But the ending of that game was so fucking disjointed, and the fact that you'd had characters killed, fair enough, right? One of my favourite films that I've ever watched is The Usual Suspects. Just about everybody dies in that. But the main thing is, they wrap it up with a fucking brilliant story. This was not a brilliant story, and it was not wrapped up well. Whatever the, you know, I don't know if he pulled it off with most of his characters surviving or whatever, but that was just terrible. It was just so disjointed, the way that it showed you the ending and just stopped so suddenly. For me, very poor.
Okay.
But hopefully this could be a bit better, but I just want the story to be better.
Yeah, I mean, some of the early reviews, and I saw like Giant Bomb, and I saw a couple of those sites. It seems like it's getting kind of middle of the road reviews.
Is it really? Okay.
Yeah, a lot of them, I think, though, they're still, and this is one of those things where you either don't mind the gameplay, or tolerate the gameplay, or you really hate the gameplay. And when I say gameplay, I mean the actual gameplay mechanics of David Cage's games. And a lot of them are kind of knocking beyond Two Souls, you know, for doing some of the same things. In essence, what he did in Heavy Rain 2, it's you end up kind of having to do gameplay mechanics for kind of rudimentary or mundane things.
Yeah.
And it...
There's no point.
You know... Right. The
mechanics side of it, if we get a good story, you've got the forgiveness in you, because we all saw that with, The Walking Dead. You know, it wasn't the best mechanics for playing the actual game, but because they kept it simple.
Right. But the difference between The Walking Dead, I think, and for my take, like Heavy Rain, was that, you know, in The Walking Dead, it seemed like the gameplay, quote unquote, mechanics, when you had to involve those mechanics, and they weren't the greatest mechanics for sure, but they usually were focused around kind of engaging gameplay moments. And the thing about Heavy Rain, and it sounds like Beyond Two Souls to a certain degree, is that he involves gameplay mechanics around just dumb things, like the doors, for instance, you know, having to flick the analog sticks, or, you know, I'm trying to remember how they handled some of that stuff in
go to the fridge,
Heavy Rain.
Get pizza out, put it in the microwave.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'd much rather watch a cinematic of me going into a kitchen and pulling out and doing a daily routine thing, as opposed to having to play the daily routine. Because pulling the pizza out of the fridge and putting it in the microwave is not terribly fun. And I would be just as happy watching that unfold as opposed to, you know, having to play it, and in some instances fight with some difficult control mechanics. So, yeah, you know, I'm sure the storyline, though, will still be improved just based on some of the main voice actors. I'm very curious to, you know, when you do finally get to play the full game, to see how William Dafoe does, because I did hear some audio of him. And the trailer stuff we saw, he sounds brilliant. But I have to admit, when I heard him most recently at one little clip, it brought back some Jason moments. And I was just like, okay. I'm hoping this isn't maybe something that's more akin to David Cage's direction and how he's directing some of the voice acting. But I don't know. We'll have to wait and see, I guess. But let's talk about some of your other games, because there's quite a few others on this list here, Rich.
Yeah, Trip Down Memory Lane. A newer game, and this was on the iPad, and I played and finished, but not finished, the epilogue of the Room. So you may have heard, I heard a couple of podcasts talk about this that made me go out and buy it. One of them in particular was Stuart Fowler from Veteran Gamers. Yeah, this puzzle game is absolutely brilliant. Loved it from start to finish. It guides you enough to make you feel like you're clever, which I think there was a Duke moment at one stage where he was on about puzzle games where you want them to make you think that you're clever, but you know, off the time they make you feel like you're dumb because you can't work stuff out.
Right, right.
This does a really good job of holding your hand if you need your hand holding. It's got a clue system in it, basically. So if you do get stuck and you've got frustrated with it, you can click the question mark and it'll give you a clue, and then it'll tell you how many clues it's going to give you with regards to what you're looking into at the moment. But because it's totally freeform, you've got a box of some sort, because they do change throughout the game, that you basically can just freely look around it. You can rotate it, you can look underneath it, and you've got to try and find where the next entrance into this box is, and then it will reveal, say, a secret drawer, and within that drawer you might have a letter in it along with a cog or something that's going to make something else open up. And then a cool thing they do as well, which is really nice, is they give you an eyepiece early on. And at any point you can put this eyepiece on and it turns it into like night vision. But with that, they use that as an interesting way of doing 3D puzzles. So you might be looking at a plate just risen out the top of a box. So you put the eyepiece on, and when you look at it through the eyepiece, everything's changed. So you've got like an illuminous puzzle in front of you, which if you rotate, lines of light can then be combined in 3D or rotated to solve a puzzle. Which is, it's really cool. And it's got a wicked supernatural, story behind it as well, which is, it's sort of making me, you know how you have the great thing about Portal where it is in essence, it's a puzzle game, but it's got a really cool backstory with loads of twists and turns in it. This is a similar sort of thing because you're finding out through these letters that this guy is basically sinking himself into something that he can't handle by trying to harness this energy that he's found out about. But the energy has got a lot to do with supernatural portals and stuff like that. And not to spoil it, but you get that idea fairly early on in it. But it's well worth playing. Really good game. And I'm just trying to crack the epilogue of it now. But, yeah, that's cool.
Right, excellent.
Briefly, because it wasn't too impressive, but it looked really nice. Gianna Sisters. So that's it's Gianna Sisters Twisted Dreams. That's a free game that's on the Instant Library on PSN Plus. So that's just come out this month. Platformer. It's got that interesting thing that I liked with, what was it called again? Overlord or the one where you switch the colours by using your bumpers. Yeah. And that will change what platforms you can jump on. Yeah.
God, now I can't remember what it's called, but yes, I know what you're talking about. It was like,
I can't remember.
Was it red and blue that you
switched
between?
Yeah, red and blue and you switch it and it was like, almost a bullet hell platformer type thing. But anyway, I was trying to get Mike to play it and he never bought it. But this has got the same sort of mechanic. So it rolls out some interesting mechanics to do with the jumping. So you can do like double jumps and stuff like that. But you can do double jumps and latch onto things with your offensive moves and stuff. And it makes you do jumps and you can ricochet yourself off walls and stuff like that. But then you get this switching mechanic with going from, it's like a fluffy nice world. And then if you flip it, you're in like demon world where it's all red and fiery. But yeah, it's cool little platformer. I think I'd probably play it again, but it's the sort of game I'll sit down on a Saturday morning and play with James because he'll like that. Been playing a good chunk of Need for Speed Most Wanted.
It's a good little racer.
It is a good little racer, and I found myself playing it a bit like GTA, because you can just wander around and stuff, and then set off all manner of mayhem, and then get the cop cars chasing you, and that's earning you XP in itself. I was playing it a lot like that, and then I just accidentally come across like events, and then just try them, and then. Then you get the auto login. This is brilliant. I've really got into that. And you know what's really wicked about this, Greg? Is it does that cross-platform thing. So it's all... I've hooked it up to my Origin.
It's on Origin.
Yeah, and it's got all my friends off the Xbox as well that are coming in with times and stuff. And that's brilliant. So, you know, I think it was Verbal Rob and Tuscan. They had like quite a few times set up as well.
You know, it's funny because we talk about, you hear people talking about, cross platform play. Will it ever happen? And the reality is that no, cross platform play between the Xboxes and the PS, you know, the PlayStations of the world, and even the Nintendos of the world. It's not going to happen. These companies are always going to gate that experience. However, when you have a third party in line, they can do something asynchronously, at least, and there's still the potential for, you know, PC and a console version to get, you know, crossplay going. But the reality is it's really going to be more of this asynchronous play that I think is going to be where you get your quote unquote cross platform play happening.
Yeah. But it's a really good hook to get into the game.
Yeah. And Need for Speed Most Wanted is a great game.
Yeah. It is. I'm enjoying it. It's great. So once again, cheers mechanics. Love you, mate. Next up after that, where should we go next? Did I talk about Dust 514? And I won't go too much into it.
You probably haven't. I know we've talked about it a number of times before, but certainly welcome your thoughts. I'm gonna curtail you a little bit because I don't want to get us going too long because we have quite a few things to cover.
I'll just briefly touch on it.
Brief thoughts.
I like it because it looks like Halo. I hate the shooting on it.
I like it because it looks like Halo. I hate it because it doesn't shoot like Halo. And that was actually kind of one of my impressions of the game. I
don't feel very empowered by it. Yeah. Can't get many kills.
No.
Sniper rifles, successful, but that's about it.
Right. And visually, I know it's gone through some upgrades, so I don't know how it looks these days. But when I was playing through it at the time, it still seemed a little bit rough at spots, and there still were issues of some lagginess happening, and that could potentially be part of what you're seeing with the shooting side too. I don't know.
No, it looks nice. I've got to say, I thought it looked nice. Yeah. Shooting. I didn't like the shooting, didn't it? Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll leave that one. Put that one to bed. Uncharted.
Finished Uncharted?
I finished the first Uncharted.
Excellent.
I'm in possession of the second Uncharted, and I have the single-player campaign for the third Uncharted, which was free with PSN Plus.
Right.
So, got them together.
So you're about to play what many have felt was arguably the best Uncharted out of the three.
Well, listen to me. Uncharted 1, I think, an excellent game.
Yes.
The acting and stuff in it is brilliant.
Oh yeah, you're in for some more treat on that regard.
But the one thing that did disappoint me, and this may be because I've heard multiple opinions on all three of the games now, is I thought there was going to be loads more cinematic stuff in it. Do you know, to do with, like, you know, in Tomb Raider, you had multiple occasions where something would happen and then you've got to do these things that I didn't like, the quick timey type event things, but I thought there was going to be loads of this stuff on the grand scale that you were going to see. There didn't seem to be that much in the first one, but I did like the mixture of gameplay in it. I thought the gunplay was brilliant. I preferred the gunplay in this to Tomb Raider. And I thought Tomb Raider outdid it on graphics, but then again, you've got to think about the age of the game.
This was the first.
But you could see how much Tomb Raider nicked off it as well.
Oh, yeah. They definitely looked at the Uncharted model and they said, okay, let's apply that to Lara Croft.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a brilliant move for Tomb Raider.
Yeah, definitely.
Because Uncharted is a series worthy of being copied.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah,
definitely. I really got into the collectibles on this as well. And the one I love the bit with the jet ski. You know, when you start using the jet ski.
I didn't play the first Uncharted.
Didn't you?
I only played 2 and 3. No. Never played the first Uncharted, so.
Well, They give you a jet ski and you've got your partner with you, which is this lady, and there's this will they, won't they, you know, a bit of romantic, but she always gives him shit and he gives her shit type relationship. But anyway, he's basically driving the jet ski around, and then you've got this rocket grenade launcher and it's her that's holding it, so you can, and I thought them levels were brilliant. Really not unique, but it was just a nice take on, you know, you were controlling the boat with him and she was the one doing the shooting. So yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. A few good on rails bits. I think they were the most cinematic bits in it, actually, when you're in the Jeep and shooting stuff, in like a fast race scenario type thing. And they were really well done as well. So I'm looking forward to the second one. Definitely looking forward to the second one.
They do a good job of those kind of, moments where, you want to come on rails. I mean, there are sequences in future games that you will be playing that, you know, in essence, you are running, but it's kind of cinematic in the way they do it.
Yeah.
Because they move the camera around to where you're running towards the camera. Yeah. So it's a little difficult in that regard, but it's also so kind of cinematic because of what you see, what's behind you.
Yeah, that's,
and you see what you're running away from.
Yeah, that's right. They do a fair bit of that.
That's pretty exciting stuff.
The Jeep ride. So really enjoyed that, but fucking hell, God, I had to pick up some ammo in that. You pick up so much ammo. But yeah, overall, really good. Another great game that I think at the minute is the best shooter I've played on the PS3 is Resistance 3.
Yeah, that was a game that just didn't get the love. I don't know why, but you know, it seemed to just really fall. And I don't know if it's because of when it got released. I'm trying to remember. I think it got released like in early September when it came out. And for some reason, that game just did not get traction.
Can I just say, this game pisses all over Killzone from what I've seen so far.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember if that was the same year because Killzone comes out in a different time frame. It doesn't come out in holiday. I don't recall why Resistance 3, but Resistance 3 like didn't get the support. Maybe it was because Uncharted 2 was coming out, now that I think about it. But I just recall them releasing Resistance 3, and it really kind of screwy because when originally they were doing it, Resistance 3 was going to get bundled with the Sony TV. Remember the Sony, like 20-inch 3D TV?
Yeah.
And then suddenly they weren't bundling it, and then they were, but then they weren't. And it was just like really weird what happened with that whole thing, and they dropped Resistance 3 off of the bundle, if I remember correctly. And then it just kind of came out. There wasn't a lot of advertising for it, and so many people were like, I don't know why this game isn't getting more love. It's really good. And it just kind of came and went with a whimper.
Yeah, the thing I'd say with it as well is, if you like, well, hold on. We always see these, you know, the journos and stuff that are trying to cry out for a new shooter to overturn Call of Duty. And we had it with Homefront, and then, you know, various other games have come along and stuff.
Right.
This game's brilliant. It's for a first person shooter. Another one, Metro, that always gets cried out for the fact that it's got really good atmosphere and setting and story and so on. Mm-hmm. This reminds me a lot of what Metro was like when you first start playing that, you know, it giving you the feel for it. If you watch, is it Falling Skies? You know, the post,
yes.
If you watch that and you enjoy that, and you want to pick up a game and play something that's like that, this is it, man. Get on this and try it. The guns in it are awesome, and I've heard talk before about Insomniac are really good for doing shooters and the weapons they give you. Even the handgun in this is first class. You can, to be able to fire a magnum and then just press the other trigger and it will explode, and if there's any enemies around what you've just shot, they'll get blown up as well. Brilliant. But
it's funny because they got their, Insomniac became known for all their crazy weapons, not from Resistance, but from, Ratchet and Clank.
Yeah.
Because they have all kinds of crazy weapons in that
game.
Or in those games, I should say.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, as I've been seeing, James has been playing a fair bit of Ratchet and Clank. So,
It's a great... I love the Ratchet and Clank games. That is one thing I wish Insomniac would have been able to really... maybe they just kind of went too long with it, I don't know. But those games are always fun. And talk about great voice acting, because it's just the comedy in those games is brilliant.
Yes. I think there's a Vita one coming or something.
I know there is one coming up, but I'm not sure. I don't know if it is Insomniac that's doing it or if it's another company.
Okay. Right.
I don't know. But needless to say, Resistance 3, yep. loving yep. it, enjoying
loving
it
Loving that
much.
A lot, enjoying okay. that. And then the final one, which again is going to get some love, and it was another freebie off the PSN Plus,
right.
Dragon's Dogma, Dark Arisen.
Now, this is the sequel,
yeah.
If you will, or it's the expansion pack, but it was kind of like a sequel, because if I'm not mistaken, it's the original game plus additional content?
Yeah, it feels okay. like it's definitely like an expansion, because I accidentally went on the expansion bit and soon found out that I should be getting my ass the hell out of there, because obviously I think it's based on you being leveled
right.
to a certain level. Well, it felt like that. With the first fight that I encountered, I thought, nah, I'm going to go back to where I was sort of. So basically, if you want to go to the expansion pack, if anybody's got it and not played it, you've got to go down to the home village where you start, you wait till night time, and then you go to the pier down by the sea, and there's a woman there, and she will take you to this island, and that is basically all of the expansion bit for it.
Okay.
But firstly, looks and feel of this game, and it's going to be on for a winner with this, definitely, anyway. It felt so much like Dark Souls.
Well, you know, I was waiting to make that comment, because to me, Dragon's Dogma had kind of that feel, a little bit of a feel of Skyrim, but also that the I won't say nasty, but the difficulty of
a
Dark Souls.
Not difficulty.
In that. Well, okay, maybe we're punishing.
No,
is that maybe
not
right?
Not really.
Because I remember getting my ass handed to me by a flying griffin, and I was like, okay.
there's that to it, but it's different in the way that it's a lot more. I think it's a lot more forgiving if you get killed easily, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's the style, what you look at, you know, the fonts and, you know, the characters and the movement of them. It just all reminded me really a lot of Dark Souls. But the fact that you've got a party and you've got this pawn system,
right.
which basically is...
Pawn system is pretty cool.
The pawn system is brilliant. I really got into that straight away and went and recruited and paid money for decent pawns.
Right. So for those that don't recall, Dragon's Dogma, basically you have your main character, but then you can hire, or you have two, is it two henchmen with you? Maybe three? I can't remember how large the party was,
but
so you have up to three henchmen, but you can actually go kind of into, I forgot what they call their, the henchmen space, if you will. And basically it's, you go onto the internet, the Capcom servers, and basically you can upload your characters onto those servers, and then you can pull either friends or other people that have put their pawns up to be hired out, and those people will come into your game and play with you, and basically when they leave, they kind of take that experience with them,
yeah.
and bring it back to the owner, so to speak.
Yeah, and you can gift stuff to them as well.
Okay.
If you don't hire one, if you go up to one, you can talk to them, and then you can gift them something. And there's loads of little trophies you can pick up for doing stuff like that.
And I remember that one of the cool things, and correct me if I'm wrong, but so the henchmen, let's say you came across a dragon and you had never fought a dragon before yourself.
Yeah.
With your henchman, but you had hired a henchman. If that henchman had previously fought a dragon and knows how to fight a dragon, he basically kind of will give you hints or kind of help you to know how to fight the dragon?
Yeah.
Something to that effect?
And I think he's like XP and stuff, and his skill set will reflect that when he starts fighting it.
Right.
And so I think he, you know, might be able to put more damage on than what another
right.
pawn would have done, because he's actually fought one before. It's really cool, and it's got another similarity with Dark Souls. I think the enemy levels, they're not like, you know, Skyrim, where I think they projectively change as you level up. With Dark Souls are fixed. If you can't beat that person, then you have to go away, grind, get a bit, a bit more built up, and then try again.
Which is the way it should be.
Yeah.
I would just like to point out, I've never felt like, you know, a dog is a dog. And so, you know, it shouldn't be that if you fight a dog one day and then you come across a dog years later when you've gained all this experience and you're totally buffed out, that dog should not suddenly be totally buffed out. And I don't know. I just always found that kind of funny.
I think it always helps with game design as well, because of the fact that the guys that are designing the game, they can lead your experience based on where they naturally think you're going to go to. Because, you know, obviously, at the moment, for instance, right, you come to a fort where there's, like, an attack by, like, this Hydra-type thing, and you do your right first boss battle, and you finish that off, which was quite satisfying. And then you can make your way out of the fortress. And it quite quickly, you know, if you go one way, you can soon find that you're going to get a lot of resistance. And then that automatically makes you start exploring another way and doing a few side missions and stuff to get yourself ranked up and then taking it from there. So it's the old thing that we spoke about, you know, with the graveyard in Dark Souls.
Right.
And the skeletons and stuff. It's just that sort of thing can help guide you through your experience and hopefully give you the, you know, help you want to play that game more. And it's caught me. So it's caught me a lot like Dark Souls. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's good. Really good.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for talking about games.
Yeah, that'll do.
Quite the list. Yeah, that works. Let's talk about some new releases for this week. All right. So coming out on the Wii and the Wii U this week, you've got Just Dance 2014. Let's get your boogie on.
It's still going.
I don't think it'll ever stop. Skylanders Swap Force Starter Kit comes out as well.
Oh, see, I was in game watching videos of that with our James last week. And the Skylanders. Infinity as well.
Yeah. Well, if you have a 3DS, Rich, Pokemon XY comes out this week, as well as Skylanders Swap Force Starter Kit for 3DS. And if you dabble in the old DSiWare eShop, you can check out Escape from Zombie City. Moving over to the PS3, Beyond Two Souls. Borderlands Game of the Year Edition comes out this week. Capcom Essentials. Disgaea D2, A Brighter Darkness. Dishonored Game of the Year Edition comes out. Just Dance 2014. You're excited for that, Rich. I know. I can see it. Skylanders Swap Force Starter Kit as well. All hitting retail shelves this week for the PS Triple. Moving over to PSN this week. Atomic Ninjas. Battle of Tiles EX. Disgaea D2. A Brighter Darkness. Dishonored Game of the Year Edition. F1 2013. Heavenly Guardian. Just Dance 2014. And Orc Attack. All hitting PSN games this week. And moving over to the PS Vita. Nothing retail-wise, but PSN games. Atomic Ninjas. Malicious Rebirth. I hadn't heard of that before. Malicious Rebirth. I suppose it would be Malicious Rebirth. I really read it properly. Worms Revolution Extreme, also hitting PS Vita this week. And moving over to the Xbox 360, you've got Borderlands 2 Game of the Year Edition, Capcom Essentials, Dishonored Game of the Year Edition, Just Dance 2014, Skylanders Swap Force Starter Kits. I don't know what the Xbox Live Arcade game is this week, but if you want some DLC, the Bureau XCOM Declassified Hangar 6 R&D comes out this week. I'm moving over to the PC and Mac. Bionic Duos. Borderlands 2 Game of the Year Edition. Chainsaw Warrior. Cook Serve Delicious. Dishonored Game of the Year. Gas Guzzlers Extreme. Glare comes out to the PC this week. And last but not least, because there's two more. You've got Isabel, and then Salvation Prophecy, all coming out to a PC near you. And that does it for new releases. Yeah. All right, Rich. Well, we've got some news headlines to go through. So I'm going to run them through real quick and just comment as needed. I think there's going to be one in particular we'll comment on. Actually two now that I think about it. Because the first one, there's a report out that the UK retailer Simply Games was increasing PS4 pre-order prices. They originally tried to blame this on, I believe, Sony, saying that it was a mandate from Sony. But it turns out it was just Simply Games basically contacting customers and telling them that in order for them to confirm their launch day console, they needed to basically, in a sense, kind of confirm the new bundle. And it was basically upgrading. This basically said that they must make a new console choice by upgrading to bundles that range in prices from £414 to £469 in order to ensure a release date delivery. So the bundles were including things like the DualShock 4 controllers or an extra DualShock 4 controller, third-party charging cables, and then also PS4 games. So there were a range of bundles that they were kind of trying to force you into choosing. But in essence, all of them had at least something extra added to them.
I think another thing that muddied the waters with it was, I'm sure they had like an in-between distributor, if I remember right, something wholesale. And what they were saying was it was because they switched it and they were only going to supply them with these bundles that was the reason why. And then I think, if I remember rightly, Eurogamer tried to contact the wholesalers and they were saying they had nobody that dealt with PR, so they couldn't give any sort of statement whatsoever. And then the actual one that you're talking about, they couldn't get hold of them full stop. They didn't really have proper contact details. So it's all a little bit shady. And then there's...
Oh, it's very shady.
And there's loads of forums and stuff now that the Sony boys are saying, right, we're not going to buy anything from this website ever again, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but it's a bit naughty, isn't it, really?
No, it's completely underhanded, and I don't blame them for saying they don't want to deal with that retailer ever again, because that's some shady practice. And just to confirm that this was not something led by Sony, Sony UK did respond to the issue saying it would not force anyone to buy something they didn't want. There you have
good
it.
Good news. On the other side, there's good news as well, because what they were saying was, by the sounds of the yields and stuff that they're getting, they reckon that they're going to be quite well set up in the run-up to Christmas for supply as well.
Yeah, and they should be restocking pretty quick. So I don't foresee us having any of those crazy Wii shortages that we saw back in the day when the Wii came out, where they were just like gone for months and nobody could get a hold of one. I think that this go round you're going to see ample supply come back into the supply chain pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Speaking of good news, Rich, another Sleeping Dogs game is on the way. Yeah, so the developer of Sleeping Dogs, United Front Games, announced basically through a recent trademark for Triad Wars that is, in fact, it is another Sleeping Dogs game. So that's something to be excited for. Let's see. Battlefield 4 Second Assault DLC will be available at launch for the Xbox One. So remember, they had the quote-unquote exclusivity, timed exclusive DLC for Second Assault. Apparently it's just going to be there day one. So this just further kind of shows some shadiness on the side of a publisher in terms of just DLC. Is it really DLC, or are they holding something back out of a game and just selling it as an add-on? And clearly, I think Second Assault is a case, you know, DICE and EA are basically, they've got this DLC, they pulled it out from the main game, and they said, hey, we're just going to make this as an add-on. So we'll give it to the Xbox One first, and then, you know, a few weeks or a month later, whenever it's going to be, we'll sell it or give it free for premium members to the PlayStation 4 owners. I don't know. It's shady. I hate DLC like that. I think if you have stuff at launch, it should be in the game, on the disc. Anyway. Let's see, DualShock 4 will work with Windows for basic functions. So there's something positive there. To what extent it works, they didn't really go into it, but basically, when asked on Twitter if Sony would release a driver for the DualShock 4 to make it compatible with Windows PCs, Yoshida Shuhei, who's president of Sony Worldwide Studios, basically said the analog sticks and buttons will work just fine. When pressed if this meant the controller would feature Windows compatibility by default, Yoshida responded it would for basic functions. So we're not quite sure what the basic functions are overall, but clearly...
Like a little trackpad. That'd be brilliant.
Yeah, that's the question. Would it in fact work? Who knows? Let's see. Valve unveils prototype Steam Box specs, Rich.
They're all over the show. Fucking hell.
300 prototypes will ship with the following components. So basically, on the GPU side, the prototypes will get one of these, not all of these, but it could be the NVIDIA Titan, it could be the GTX 780, the GTX 760, or the GTX 660. Basically, there's a range of video cards there that go from relatively inexpensive to super expensive.
That one was on about not long ago. It's a monster, isn't it?
Titan is like $1,000 retail. Yeah. So, yeah. The CPU will have either an i7, Intel i7-4770, or it will have the i5, or in some instances, it'll be an i3 Intel processor. And then the RAM side of it, 16 gigabytes of DDR3, 1600 megahertz, and then 3 gigs of DDR5 for the GPU. And in terms of storage capacity, looks like it is and this is, I think, standard across all of them, it's a 1 terabyte, 8 gigabyte hybrid solid state hard drive.
Jeez.
Last but certainly not least, the power supply will be a 450-watt 80-plus gold power supply. So quite a bit of power there. And dimensions basically about 12 inches long by 12 inches wide. Sounds about like a console box. All I have to say about this is looking at those specs, these Steam machines, at least from what I'm seeing here, are not going to be cheap. I don't see them necessarily being in that $400 to $500 price range. I think these are going to be closer to a $1,000 price range. And then it really begs the question of what audience are they truly shooting for with this?
But can you remember a while back where Gabe Newell was talking about actually building up like an ecosystem where you can earn money and stuff within Steam for creating assets and so on for, you know, like people make hats and stuff for... Team Fortress. Can you not see like Sweatshop Labor where they say, well, you can have this subsidized console with a Titan processor in it, but you have to give us 30 man hours a week creating hats and guns for our next game, and they have to be up to a certain standard or else we'll repossess the console.
Well, I can see them doing that to a certain degree because these 300 prototype units are going out to a select 300 beta testers who basically they're not paying. They're letting them, I don't believe they're giving them these consoles. I believe they are just, lending them to them for them to use. I could be wrong on that part.
Yeah. I think they had prerequisites, didn't they? You had to be like a big picture user and had experience in using that on Steam and so on. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, hey, beta testing, you know, this is the ultimate form of free, cheap labor.
Yeah.
that rounds out the news headlines. But some interesting stuff. I'm still very, very curious what direction Valve goes with the whole Steam machine and Steam Box stuff. Had a pretty lengthy conversation with Mr. Steve Conger the other day about it. And just talking about, you know, I think the ultimate end goal for Valve, you know, again, they're not making this hardware. That's the other interesting dilemma that came from about all of this is basically they're, again, shopping this out to PC makers. They're asking them to make the PCs for them and then stick their OS into the PC. And we were having a little bit of debate of, okay, well, what is the cost advantage of that? you know, they're going to save some money going that route, the PC makers, that is, in that they're not going to have to buy or license out the operating system from, say, Microsoft. They're simply going to, you know, get the open source free Linux operating system for Steam, so the Steam OS. So they save a little bit of money there. But Valve smartly is not making the hardware. They are, again, getting somebody else to take the risk on making the hardware, and they're going to reap the benefits of having it be something that is Steam-centric and uses their marketplace. And I still will argue that Valve and Gabe Newell specifically, his hate for Microsoft and Windows 8 isn't so much his hate of Windows 8. It, I think, really boils down to he hates Microsoft because they were trying to basically cut Valve and Steam out of being on the desktop with their tiles and how the tiles worked. Because back in the when they first were announcing everything, they said, well, you had to be a kind of authorized tile vendor, if you will, and Steam wasn't one. And so Steam couldn't have a tile sitting on that Windows 8 dashboard at the time. And so Gabe Newell was pissed off about that because his bread and butter is getting people on PC to go and buy games off their marketplace. So it is a fun dynamic to watch, the war being waged there and other things, you know, in the industry. You look back at the things with Nintendo and Amazon, a similar kind of love-hate relationship where you don't see the Wii being sold on Amazon still to this day because of the whole issue with Amazon and Nintendo going back and forth trying to basically send back defective units and you know, Amazon being kind of stuck with it and Nintendo saying we won't take them back. And anyway, it was a gigantic mess. But to this day, that still is a rift. And so, I just got off on a huge tangent. Rich.
Yeah?
You with me? Are you with me?
I'm with you.
Okay. We had some questions this past week. Specifically, you threw out a question last minute saying, hey, just ask us something funny. Anything.
Yeah.
The funnier it is, the odder it is.
Actually, the hashtag was Ask Gregors.
Yeah, Ask Gregors, which scares the crap out of me. I don't know if we had any additional Ask Gregors come through, but we certainly had a couple questions come through on that. But we also had just our standard Ask Us Anything question, which I don't believe we had any new updates to. I'm checking that as we're speaking here. But we did also have a question, and that was basically, you know, what function being offered by the next gen are you most skeptical about? And I gave off some examples like streaming games, you know, cloud services, play while you download. These are all kind of some of the new big features, some of the social features like pushing to YouTube or are any of these something you're kind of skeptical about, or are you pretty much buying all in, Rich?
My biggest skepticism is the mammoth job that Sony have got with their network and everything. You know, for like making the switch to being a paid service with everything that comes with Gaikai and setting up this full experience that's going to be right from the off just because of what the past history was. God knows how many things I've got to be dubious about Microsoft now because of all of the changes of mind they've fucking had. But that's the biggest one that I've been thinking about since they first started announcing their own consoles. Was I love the vision you've got, but can you pull it off with,
right,
you know, because it is a massive investment. And hopefully with the experience they've got from the guys at Gaikai, and obviously they've brought a server infrastructure and so on with that purchase of Gaikai, that's obviously going to help them in the coming years. But yeah, there's God, no end of stuff. All the Kinect stuff about, you know, there's guys talking about the advertising thing, and then they were saying, no, you're just regurgitating facts that were brought out in the initial announcement. That's not what we're about. But there's just been so many fucking slips of the tongue over the last 6 months. So there's loads of stuff.
Well, you know, I will say this. I think I probably mimic your thoughts on streaming tech, and not just because of Sony. Microsoft's been coming out talking about their Rio server streaming service. I guess that was kind of shown off at a Microsoft event a few weeks back. And, you know, and they were streaming Halo 4 from the cloud down into, was it a Lumia 820 or 920?
Yeah, mobile phone.
Mobile phone. And then they had it on a laptop or a tablet. I love the appeal of that stuff because I love the notion and the thought of, hey, you can, you know, you literally can have a fantastic supercomputer behind the scenes to play these games on. I remember OnLive, and OnLive was that very concept of, you know, hey, we'll stream games down to you, and Gaikai was the same thing. It was, you know, streaming games to your computer, no need for the hardware to be there. You just had to have the internet connection and access to the service. And that was exciting stuff, but I still felt lag in OnLive. You know, it had its hiccups and issues. And to this day, it still does whenever I've, every once in a while gone back to it and just checked out how things are progressing. It doesn't seem like it's really progressing all that much. And that could be as much a sign of OnLive just kind of withering at the vine and dying off as it is, the tech. But I really, I have concerns about that technology really working and from a cloud-based streaming service. I'm less skeptical about the streaming from your, say, your console to a handheld in the vicinity of the console, because we know the Wii does it, and it does it fairly, you know, well from everything I've ever heard of and seen. And by all accounts, you know, the PlayStation 4 with the Vita should be doing it better than it did with the PS3 to the Vita, because I do know that there were issues of lag from Vita and PS3. And again, those are secondhand reports, so maybe I shouldn't say I know. That's just what I heard. And then there's other people that have been like, no, the experience is completely fine. So, it's a service that has huge potential, but it also seems like it's an emerging technology that, even though it's, you know, it's been around for a few years now, it still is, your experience may vary depending on your connection and your quality of connection. I guess I'm rambling on to say, Rich, I agree with you. But we did have other people responding and sending us tweets, not just about that. So, Rich, why don't you knock into the tweets? I'll pull up the gate.
Yep. Richard Webster, he put, no Xbox guide button. What the fuck? and then...
So, yeah, I guess we can talk to each one of these. So the Xbox guide button, I guess, there's no longer... It's not that it doesn't have the guide button, but it no longer brings up a dashboard guide. It just literally takes you back to the dash. So the dash can be instantly pulled up and pulled back down, so to speak, using the guide button. But you know how in the current Xbox 360 configuration, when you hit the guide button, it pulls up the little mini guide, right? Yeah. In the center of the screen. That's done away with, I guess, in the next, the Xbox One.
Yeah, it was a bit dated in design, wasn't it? But the only thing is, when the dashboard you've got now is, you click it and you're going to be back at the tile screen, aren't you? With all your tiles and stuff. Now, they've got to make that place a lot more friendly. If they make it a lot more friendly, then yeah, that might be a good place to be starting from. But if they start bombarding with all them adverts and stuff in that place, you want it to be somewhere familiar that you can hopefully customize, you know, and be able to do a little bit with yourself so that you can set it up how you want it for every time you do press that button. We'll see. Yep.
Definitely. All right, sorry, continue on.
Johnny Faultpants, Gary, he put, Microsoft's execs watching me knock out one in secret. The crafty voyeuristic bastards. I put a response to that, something about unlocking an achievement called Stroke Master. to which he replied something along the lines of his missus being very impressed with that. Yeah, then there was Darren Lizerman, and that is at Phaser Dazzlis.
Yes.
The Jaguar.
This is a response. Yeah, this is a response, by the way, to last week's podcast when I was complaining about my parents' car. Right. They have a Jaguar X-Type that broke down.
X-Tartic, what old they are, aren't they? Yeah.
Yes, 2004, I think. Okay.
Yeah, so it's basically a Ford Mondeo with a bigger engine and a different shell. So there you go.
Well, there you go. It explains a lot now.
Doesn't
explain why it took $10,000 to repair the transmission, that's all I have to say.
Yeah. So the next one that came in was from Eric Pietrowski for the Veteran Gamers, and basically this was in response to my Ask Gregor's call out on Twitter earlier. So he asks Gregor's, so it's not for me, this one, if you had to make out with one of the Veteran Gamers for half an hour, who would you pick and why?
Now, first of all, I would like to point out this was not specifically directed to me. It was at OC Podcast, at Skullduggerer, at OC Murphy's Law. So it wasn't just me. But for the sake of the argument here, I will give you the response that Stulek52, gave once he saw that question come forward. And that is, what the hell is wrong with you guys lately? And to that I say, Eric, what the hell is wrong with you, Eric? Clearly, it would be Stu. Stu's the hot one.
Really?
Eric's missing his hair. Mike is like family. It'd be like kissing your
mother. Yeah, but if you tried to kiss Stu, he'd be talking. He'd be talking while you're kissing. Yeah.
Try. And that's the exact thing. It would take so long. The kiss would probably never happen. He would talk me to sleep.
Well, I'd work my way around this because what he says, if you had to make out with one of the Veteran Gamers, so that would count for the whole community, wouldn't it?
Look at you. Yeah.
So my obvious answer to that is Bongo the Sane. It's gotta be Robbie Tate, my man. Definitely. Yeah, so there you go.
All right. Yeah, but I still like Stu Lex's response where he was just like, what's wrong with you guys? Enough making out with each other because we had a very similar question to this a little ways back. Yeah, it was a Mary Pound kill for the crew. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. But we did have a serious question thrown back out to us. And that was, it was from Stulek as well. And he said, in the next life, what do you want to come back as? My simple response, me. I want to come back as me. Damn it. I like me.
I want to come back as Phil Fish, just so I can annoy Stu and people that hate Phil Fish, because I like Phil Fish.
I must say, after watching the was it Game Dev Story?
Indie Game the Movie.
Indie Game the Movie, Game Dev Story. That's a video game. Indie Game the Movie. I grew an appreciation for Phil Fish.
Thank you.
Yeah, I can see a different side of him, the insecure side of him.
It's a frustrated creative.
And so to a small degree, there's a little, I pity is maybe the right word or not, but, I feel a little sorry for Phil Fish because he certainly is misunderstood. He has a horrible, horrible, horrible way of communicating with the public and just fans in general. He doesn't earn himself any kudos in that regard. But let's take that question and nix out being able to come back as a person. If you had to come back in the next life as an animal or a plant, something non-human, what would you like to come back as, Rich?
Something non-human.
Non-human. Right. So you can't come back as yourself. You can't come back as Phil Fish. You have to come back as either an animal or a plant.
No, I'll come back as the Cookie Monster. Fucking easy. No.
Cookie Monster.
No way. No, that's so easy. Cookie Monster.
I was thinking like an owl. I think an owl would be fun to be. A Cookie Monster, by the way, is a puppet. I'd just like to point that out.
No, it's a Cookie Monster.
Yeah. No, you want to come back as a puppet. So basically you're saying you like the idea of someone sticking their hand up your arse and controlling you.
That's what Mrs. does already.
All right.
Moving on.
moving on. Before we get you in trouble, if she hears this, we had a few responses to the question of the week in the forums over at g4te.com. The first one was from ENW99. It was very similar to a previous one. It said, Kinect watching me eat a tub of fish food, then bombarding me with adverts for ice cream. Lol. Denver J responded, I have a small concern, really. Will the damn box actually work like it's supposed to? I have no faith that the Xbox One will have all its bugs worked out. History taught me that. And PlayStation will release, 30 updates on day one? For myself, it's strange that I'd rather wait a year before I get a console to make sure it really works. No other market or device do I have the same worries. That's pretty fair. I can't really think of any other devices where I have concerns over day one release. And then last but not least, GamerGirl27, she responded to ENW's response with a lol. What he said, that's about the only thing, really. Of course, I won't get either until mid to late next year, and hopefully, like Jay said, the bugs will be worked out, although I must say I've had pretty good luck with launch day consoles. My launch day 360 didn't red ring till about 5 years after I got it. Okay. I don't know if you call that luck or not, though, because I think the luck would have been if it red ringed within that 3-year warranty period. After 5 years, it's on you. Just saying. All right, that does it for the forums. We did have an email, Rich.
Oh, yes, we did, didn't we?
Yeah, I'm gonna let you take that.
I believe
that.
This is from our man, Mr. IP, who's never been in contact with us via a written method of working. I know he's wrote to the Veteran Games a few times. So, yeah, hopefully this is a trend that continues. Okay, so he said, "Hey guys, having never emailed your show before, your question of the week has given me the opportunity to have my cherry popped, or pop your cherry. Either way, I have some concerns to voice. My biggest reservation about the next generation is the lack of power, and the new consoles aren't even out yet, and already the PC has shown its superiority. All you need to do is compare Battlefield 4 on the Xbox One to an high-end PC. And the differences are immediately apparent, not just visually either. What does this mean for the future of the Xbox One and the PS4 a few years down the line? Will PC games be superior for this whole generation, with the Steam machines making a push to bring PC gaming into the living room? I'm not sure that I even want to own a non-upgradable, less powerful box. Don't get me wrong, though. I'm still going to buy an Xbox. When my friends come over, I want games we can easily play together. And I'm interested to see where the smart glass will go. I've just got a feeling that next year I will be far more PC focused than I have been previously. Anyway, thank you for letting me get that off my chest. Your podcast is definitely one of my favorites, and I hope you never change. In fact, if any of you ever leave, I'll be forced to burn burn Chinny's house down. Much love, I, Pete." So,
I love that he chose Chinny's house to burn down first off. Yeah, it's nice.
Right, I resign.
Okay. I resign too. Burn it. Burn it. IP, you know, he raises a good point. You know, these consoles definitely don't feel like the big generational leap that we saw with the Xbox 360 and the PS3. I think, it's going to be interesting because one of the things we talked about was our reservations about streaming, right? But I think that really is the future that both Sony and Microsoft are trying to go for.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where they see this all heading, is that games are going to be streaming out of the cloud. And if that is truly the future that they're looking to implement and thinking that might be part of this new generation, just might take a few years to really come into full form, then the hardware really becomes a non-issue. If you're streaming games from a server bank somewhere, they can upgrade the server banks and those games will always be on kind of the best hardware. Again, assuming they're going to be putting the best of the best hardware in there. But I mean, the box that sits under your TV suddenly becomes far less important in a streaming situation.
True.
But the scary part is the streaming situation.
Valve are either about to pull off a masterstroke in their timing, or they're going to completely mistime it. I mean, we've already spoke about. I know lots of people that have grown. We know lots of people who talk on podcasts, who've basically bitten the bullet and jumped into the PC frame of things, and I talked with it myself over the last 6 months, and we spoke about it on the podcast and so on. There is a lot of people that have been playing games for a lot of years now that are not as scared of changing the platform that they're on. I've just done it. I've just switched to a Sony platform. I've got no qualms about keeping tabs on what's going off with these boxes. The idea that you could actually buy a box and then upgrade it when you want afterwards is very appealing to me. And it always has been. It's just to see what form factor this takes. And I don't know if they've given themselves enough lead time. I think a key thing for this box that we're hearing about from Steam is going to be this first year period where you've got people who are hanging off to see what's happening with regards to the services and stuff from Sony and Microsoft. I'm not sure if they're going to be bringing it to market too late, because I can see it being a couple of years before A, they get the developers on board, because these guys are going to have to start making all of their stuff for Linux as well. Agreed? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also they've got to bring these boxes have got to come to market from multiple different suppliers in an agreed format that they like. And to me at the minute it's all beta testing. It's going to be, I think it's going to be properly, boxes on shelves, probably, I reckon, 2 to 3 years before you start seeing it become something that's out there.
Yeah, I think Valve was a little premature in their announcement, but I think in some respects they had to be because they need to get it out there. It's coming. They want to at least throw that out there. So, there's so many questions around the Steam machines, and the Steam box, and the Steam OS.
You talked briefly about what the ethos and the thoughts of Sony and Microsoft are, but we also already know what Gabe Newell's take on all of that is. He doesn't believe that you're going to get an environment I think he said something along the lines of the next 10 years where you can comfortably stream games. The right resolution and get yourself the same experience as what you get from a computer. And that's why he's put all of his chips in this idea about having multiple boxes around your house that basically use a powerhouse in the middle, which might be one of these boxes, or it might just be a normal bog standard PC that's been built with, the right amount of specs to be able to act as a hub for all of these other boxes around the house. So it's going to be really interesting the next few years.
Right. I mean, It is funny if you really think about it. As you were describing it, I suddenly realized, you know, the vision of the Steam box, the Steam machine working in conjunction, you know, streaming from your PC in the house, really is kind of the same vision of Gaikai and OnLive, in that you have a server farm or your PC server that's streaming out to another device. It's just on the scale. So the Steam scale is going to be much smaller and focused, you know, in the home environment. And then you've got these much larger grandiose ideas of Gaikai and OnLive and Microsoft's Rio and it all, at least for the larger versions of this, the cloud-based ones, it completely is all about bandwidth, internet bandwidth. And you know, if that is there, those services, I think, can effectively work. If it's not there, then those services are useless. So,
and it means that both of these, you know, major players, as in Sony and Microsoft, sooner or later are going to have to basically address the white elephant in the room again, which is the one that they did previously about always online and you know, being able to have the right capacity of broadband to be able to have your games and have them delivered, not digitally as a download, but obviously streamed. So, yeah.
Right. Well, and in fairness, Sony kind of towed the line in some respects, because they've got Gaikai, but then they also introduced PS Vita TV, which you know, streams off the PS4. So it's basically doing the same thing that Gabe's talking about for SteamOS and Steam machines, in that you've got the PS4 as your hub, and then it's streaming out to this smaller, you know, PS Vita TV to another TV somewhere in the house, and you can play off that. That doesn't address the power issues that IP was talking about. I think ultimately, you know, they are not going to compete with PCs 4 and 5 years from now. I think you're going to start to see again that power differential really starting to take shape. And while Sony and Microsoft may think these machines are going to last for 10 years like they did in this current generation, I think that's not going to happen. That technology is going to advance, and we'll see a shorter console life cycle this next coming, console life cycle. But I don't know what that next box takes shape as, if it is really just a stream box.
That next box might be a television that's just got the actual
connectivity,
GUI built into it, and that's it. Job done.
Yeah. All right, well, let's wrap things up. Let's start talking about what's going on this week, which is a whole lot of nothing. No big gaming events happening right now, but I can tell you that if you like Minecraft, the Minecraft server for Gate is, in fact, back up, and that is all thanks to Thuper. Lousy at Gaming, they not only still do their Friday night NASCAR racing, and I say they still do because I have not heard otherwise, but they also have a new website. Lousy at Gaming redesigned their website, so go check that out. Birthdays this week. Rich, we want to wish big happy birthdays to Batch, Ensign Deadmeat, Kinney999, Bousy, ITF Diesel, Sinclair, and Betty Bear. Big happy birthdays to all of you, and welcome to a few new members. Carlos Guy, Karloski, sure, and Spanner. Spanner could be just a spammer, who knows? But welcome anyway. Victories achieved this week. There's this great little contest that's happening over at Gate. It's called the Victory Achieved Contest. All you have to do is take a picture of the end credit scene along with your face in that picture, and it does have to be your face, not some other body part, and then you tweet that to @g4te.com. You have to spell the dot and let them know you achieved victory on that game, and of course tell them what the game was. You get entered into a contest, and there's going to be a cool little giveaway that'll happen after October 31st. So time is winding down. So be like these people who got victories achieved this past week. Dr. C. Smith finished Diablo 3 and Remember Me. Amaras 89 finished GTA 4. PG Tips 77 finished Halo Wars, quite possibly the best game ever. Just short, because, of course, we all know XCOM Enemy Unknown was the best one. Skulldogger finished The Room.
And Uncharted. Did you have that on last week?
He didn't. Oh, did you take a? Did you do for Uncharted? I think we might have done it last week. Yeah. So, yeah, you got credit. Just make sure, you know.
I need to be in the spotlight.
Resend it.
I need to be in the spotlight.
Well, let's hear what this week's spotlight is. Now, I apologize because, Parsnip, you sent me the spotlight. It was supposed to go in last week. It didn't go in. I apologize profusely. Here we go. This week's community spotlight. Spotlight.
Hello, everybody. This is Parsnip Knows 3000 with another weekly community spotlight. Dun-da-da! This week, I am going to mention the people that have played on the G4TE arcade more than others. And in some cases, in fact, in most cases, the bastards have beaten the high scores that I managed to get. Anyway, even though I hate them because they beat my scores, I will mention them because they deserve it. So, Marcanix, It's a Zombie Duck, PG Tips, and the top runner at the moment in the G4TE arcade leaderboard, which you can find on our homepage, is Stickman. Well done, Stickman. I don't know how you do it. I really don't know how you got so many high scores on so many games. Anyway, that's it from me. I will talk to you all again next week. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Mr. Parsnip. And again, apologies for being so late. All right, Rich. It's that time where we talk about, you know, the stuff, like the emailing of the show. So if you're going to email the show, Rich, where do you send an email?
Would it be podcast@gmail.com? Would it be OCpodcast or one word? It's been a while. Fair play, Greg.
Yeah,
and I don't normally do the email one.
Yes.
OCpodcast or one word @gmail.com.
Rich, I got to keep you on your toes. I mean, you know, just because you've taken a few weeks off doesn't mean I'm going to cut you any slack.
I would never want any slack cutting for you, Gregus.
Well, then, in fact, I will not. Rich, if you were going to send a tweet to yourself and have you respond to it through our Overseas Connection Twitter account, where would you send that tweet?
It would be @OC_podcast.
Right. And, of course, we do want iTunes reviews because they certainly help us out. We, again, delinquent in checking our iTunes reviews, but one of these days we will get to it. But please understand, they are important. They help us get seen so other gamers can hear us. And that's the most important part. You know, we do this for free because we enjoy it. But, you know, we want people to find us and you know, expand their gaming horizons. Or limit them if you want to go that route. Anyway, Rich, shout-outs.
I'm going to shout out everybody that's done any sort of correspondence on the Twitters. I'd like to thank also Tuscan77 for sending all these little handy hints still via the PlayStation messaging system, which you'll have to forgive me because I don't take too much notice of it and it's not as in your face as a lot of them, but I am getting used to it. And also anybody that has got a PS3 that they use and don't dust off every 6 months, if they want to add me, it's Skullduggerer. You've not, Greg, but that's because you probably don't turn yours on very often.
Rich, I have a newsflash.
Oh, you got rid of it, didn't you? Yeah.
I still have my account.
No, you did. You got rid of it.
I have to go on.
I'd also like to shout out the Nottingham Beer Festival, which I will be attending this Friday. I might not remember it. It's in the middle of Nottingham Castle. So it's going to be in a medieval setting. So Squire, pass me a flagon of ale and, I will see anybody that's down there. Cause there's a few people from around the Nottingham area. So if you're going down, just send me a tweet.
Rich, all I have to say is, just be wary if at some point you're like in a room within the castle and they start closing the doors and locking them, and the person next to you, you notice, has some kind of like chainmail armor underneath their shirt. Just be wary. Red wedding, Rich. Oh, red wedding.
It's getting all dark, Soulsy, and yeah, Game of Thrones. Yeah, very good. And I'm going to shout out... I've got to give my son a dual shout out, because this week my son, after being bombarded with tunes and mixes in the car, has basically asked me to teach him how to mix. So I've told him that he's got to do a list of 3 songs, and then we're going to try and work out how to mix them at the weekend. So at the minute he's got Gangnam Style. So
nice.
He wants that. And then there's also Blurred Lines. He wants that. And there's going to be another one, and we've got to learn how to mix that. And then the other one, well, you love this one, Greg. You'll love this one. He's gone mad, batshit crazy on Kingdom Rush on the iPad, which is a tower defense game. So I've told him as well that this weekend I'm going to introduce him to Defense Grid. So we'll see if he gets on with that.
Nice.
On the old Xbox. But yeah, that's my shout out. What about you, Greg?
Okay. Well, let's see here. Of course, I want to shout out you, Rich, because, you know, I missed you. And I know it's been a little crazy of late, so work has been taking its toll, but, you know, you always have a spot here, of course, and you're still part of the crew, but it's just been limited duty of late, and so we miss you. And I know that same kind of falls for Mr. Christopher Matthew. Work is sometimes it's tough. That's all I got to say. Shout outs to Chris and Rich. A big shout out to Mike. Well, I shouldn't say bigger than yours, because, you know, you're all on equal footing, but Mike is going to be leading the show next week. So this is, just a heads up for everybody else. If for some reason you don't hear a show next week, it's because Mike screwed up. So blame him. I will not be here. I'm going to Hawaii. You're going to Italy though, right? So you're off to Italy. Yep. I'm off to Hawaii. Some craziness.
Oh, I've got a shout out to Chris as well. Christopher Matthew, because he's got a wicked Halloween costume lined up for his son.
Oh, we'll be talking Halloween costumes, let me tell you. Let's see. I want to shout out Extra Life, because it is coming up. It's coming up quickly, and I have not been doing my part in getting out the promotion for it. But rest assured, I am on it. Extra Life, it's happening. I'm going to do the same thing I did last year. So anybody who gives a $25 donation or more, basically you'll get entries into a drawing for a $60 Amazon gift card, you know, $60 US or the equivalent of whatever that translates out to for the UK. Or even, you know, I can probably have that happen for Australia. So, you know, I will make sure it goes out to whomever. Looking to raise money for the kids again. And yeah, I'm excited for it. It's happening, I think, in November, though. It's happening in November. It's like later this year, which is almost a good thing, because my kids' school just had their fundraiser for the school itself. So a little distance helps. Anyway.
It's gaming related.
Okay, one last one. God, we almost forgot. Yes, we have 2 last ones. If your last one is not my last one, go ahead.
I don't think yours will be mine. Nottingham, end of October, for anybody that likes attending gaming-related conferences and stuff, it's Game City in Nottingham. And it's, I think it's a week-long event as well. So if you go to I think it's the Nottingham Council website. My son pointed this out to me as well, so... Go, son. Top gamer.
Yeah, your son. Yeah. I'm telling you. We're going to get him on the podcast.
Yeah, I know they're doing multiple workshops on Steam and so on, to do with Steamworks and stuff. You know, the creation and modding, stuff like that. So there's going to be lots of that about. They've had previous talks from people involved in Uncharted and stuff like that as well. So, yeah, it's worth checking out the website and just seeing what's on as well. So... If I'm on next week, I might give you an update, because that'll be about a week before or so when it's on. So I'll try and find out some info, and then if anybody's interested. pop down to Nottingham. It's great.
Okay. All right. So one, a quick additional shout outs to Womble MK3 and the Dino, because they had me cracking up. But more importantly, Rich, we need to talk about this video. Yeah, this YouTube of this game. Well, it's a visual effects studio released this 3-minute sci-fi clip. It's a mech film. I didn't even know what they called the film. It's basically a kind of a Russian thing. It was called Keloid.
Yeah,
it's called.
It's a tech demo, effectively, for an FX studio, isn't it?
Yeah. So wickedly awesome. So yeah, Keloid. K-E-L-O-I-D. I think you can find it on YouTube. I know it's up on The Verge. All you have to look for on The Verge site is Visual Effects Studio Stuns with 3-minute clip. It's basically this 3-minute video of a life of mechs basically kind of waging war, almost Terminator-ish in terms of, or iRobot-ish, if you will, in terms of, like, it almost looks like they're trying to insinuate the robots are taking over. But it looks fantastic, awesome, but there's no game associated with it or movie associated with it yet. However, there is a game called Reset that also involves a mech that looks like it could be fantastic. It's for PC right now. The video just came out for it, so look that up on YouTube, Reset. That one also looks just phenomenal. And it's about mech. So, hey, mechs, it's good stuff. All right, we really are done now. That's it. We're out of here.
Yeah.
Oh, what's the weather like over there?
Mild. It's all right. It's nice.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's surprisingly nice and warm over here. I'm kind of like, it's October. Why isn't it? I mean, God, what does it say? It was 80 over the weekend. I mean, it was insanely warm. It's 79 today.
Oh, it's going to be warm. It's going to be warm for me next week.
Where are you
going to
be?
I'm going to Italy.
Nice. We'll talk vacations too, because I have vacation plans. That's actually why Mike is going to be doing the podcast next week. I don't know what budget airlines are like in Europe compared to here. So
it's like getting on a bus. Basically, it's like getting on a bus. The upholstery's crap.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't get any.
That's kind of like the way Southwest used to be like.
Yeah,
that.
It's just bargain bucket, man. If you're lucky, you'll get somebody going up and down with a trolley full of sandwiches and crisps.
Right.
That's about it.
Now, do they assign seats, or is it just first come, first serve?
Absolutely everything to do with the flight is an extra. So you can do that. So okay. that'll cost you an extra fee. You can take 10 kilos of luggage on a plane with you.
10 kilos? What the hell's that in pounds?
It's a rucksack, basically, mate. That's all. Yeah. Okay. You can take a rucksack on with you, and then anything else that you want to take, you have to pay for. And the way they get you is what they do is they put the baggage allowance. You'll get like a weight allowance for going out. Yeah.
Right.
But you know, we got stung by this before. You go out and your weight allowance might be 20 kilos in your case.
Okay.
But then you come back and they drop it by about 5 kilos. So there's no way you're going back without paying a fucking supplement unless you leave that 5 kilos out before you go. Fucking right, Con.
See, yeah, so getting on the plane, it doesn't get weighed, if it's carry on. Mm-hmm. However, if you're checking the bag, at like curbside or at the counter, they do weigh it, and at that, it's the bag has to be 50 pounds or lighter.
Yeah.
So what is that? It's like roughly 5 stones, I think, to you.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was funny because last night Cindy is all ready for this trip. I mean, we're already packed, and we don't even leave for like 3 more days, and she's just like, you know, ready. And she goes to pick up the suitcase. She's like, oh, shit. This thing is way more than 50 pounds. And it weighs a lot. And so.
Did she have it on the bathroom scales and all that lot?
No, that's tonight. Yeah. We're gonna put it on the bathroom scale to double check, but I'm guessing we will not be going with just one suitcase, and we'll parse it off into a second one, which is fine. But anybody who has a suitcase that weighs over, you know, like 75 pounds, Jesus. It's a lot of shit in there.
You won't see Mickey's mum when she comes back from Italy with all the fucking cheese and sausage and stuff in a bag. She smuggles fucking everything through there.
If you like this podcast, there is another site you should check out, which is called VGHub.net. And on there, you find a bunch of links to other video game podcasts, similar in vein to ours, but
different in the way they're delivered.
Some have all kinds of sound effects.
Real-time games are for old people.
Some talk about
too
RPGs.
Many, some people say.
Come on, yeah.
Some might say that.
No one says that.
Then, of course, you have links to, you know, great forums.
You don't have any other friends.
So check it out, vghub.net. It is a great starting point for your podcast discovery.